Layer 313, worsening crisis. Facing down the length of the gallery room, with the wall on your left, a text panel about 2 feet down along this wall to your left reads, "Worsening crisis. We are at the end of our string. There is nothing more we can do." President Herbert Hoover, March 4, 1933. FDR's election restored hope to many, but before he could take office in March, the economy took a disastrous turn. America's troubled banking system began to collapse. During January and February, 4,000 banks were forced out of business. Because accounts were not government insured, millions lost their life savings. Panicked depositors rushed to the remaining banks to withdraw their money. These bank runs threatened the entire financial system. In desperation, 32 states declared bank holidays, temporarily shutting their banks to prevent depositors from removing cash. Remaining states put strict limits on withdrawals. In an era before widespread credit cards, this meant people could not make purchases. In many places, barter, IOUs, and money substitutes called scrip replaced cash transactions. America's economy faced destruction, but President Hoover hesitated to act. President-elect Roosevelt gave few clues about his intentions. About 5 feet further down on your left is more text, which reads, "The 20th Amendment." FDR faced a long delay between his election in November 1932 and his inauguration on March 4, 1933. America's founders established March 4th as Inauguration Day. Living in an age of slow communication and travel, they wanted to ensure that a newly elected president had sufficient time to settle his affairs and journey to Washington, D.C. All American presidents, from George Washington until FDR, took the oath of office on that date. By the 20th century, dramatic improvements in transportation made this long interregnum impractical. In March 1932, Congress passed the 20th Amendment to the Constitution, changing Inauguration Day to January 20th. The amendment was ratified by the states on January 23, 1933. The new amendment took effect in 1937. All subsequent inaugurals have been held on January 20th. 2 feet further down to the left, text reads, "Assassination attempt." On February 15, 1933, an assassin nearly killed FDR. The attack took place at a rally for the president-elect at Miami's Bayfront Park. After speaking to a crowd from atop the back seat of an open car, FDR slid down into his seat. Suddenly, gunshots rang out. A deranged, unemployed bricklayer named Giuseppe Zangara fired 5 bullets at FDR from close range. A bystander deflected his hand, but Zangara wounded 4 people and fatally shot Chicago Mayor Anton Cermak. Roosevelt rebuffed Secret Service agents who wanted to drive him to safety. He had Cermak placed in his car and comforted him as they raced to a hospital. FDR's quiet courage made a powerful impression on the nation. Under questioning, Zangara professed hatred for all officials and everybody who is rich. Convicted of Cermak's murder, he was executed on March 20th. Another 3 feet down to the left is a glassed-in display case embedded into the wall, containing several artifacts of the assassination attempt, including a sepia lithograph depicting FDR's head cradled in a massive hand with rays of light emanating outward. A political cartoon showing a skeleton wearing a dark robe and wielding a smoking gun that is being pushed away by an outstretched arm labeled Destiny, and one of the assassin's bullets inside a silver and blue velvet box. Continuing along this left-hand wall, another 4 feet, a block of text on the wall reads, "Roosevelt and Hoover." As his inauguration approached, FDR's strained relationship with Herbert Hoover hit a low point. Once they had been friendly acquaintances while serving in Woodrow Wilson's administration. FDR hoped Hoover would enter elective politics as a Democrat. "I wish we could make him president," he wrote a friend in 1920. By 1933, Roosevelt's admiration had cooled. Hoover found FDR amiable, but badly informed and of comparatively little vision. When the bank crisis erupted, Hoover sought FDR's support for a proclamation closing the country's banks and pressed him to reveal his recovery plans. Roosevelt resisted these appeals, determined to keep his options open. By Inauguration Day, the two were barely on speaking terms. Riding to the Capitol, Hoover sat expressionless, while Roosevelt smiled and waved to the crowd. After March 4th, they never met again. To the immediate right of this panel is a photograph of President-elect Roosevelt and President Herbert Hoover seen at the start of their drive to the Capitol for the inaugural ceremonies. 2 feet beyond this photograph, on the left, is a glassed-in display case embedded into the left wall containing several facsimiles of FDR's 1933 inaugural address with the text, "FDR's inaugural address includes the famous line, 'The only thing we have to fear is fear itself.'" It's generally believed that Roosevelt's political advisor, Lewis Howe, added these words to the speech. But Howe's source is a mystery. Presidential advisor Raymond Moley claimed Howe saw the line in a 1933 department store advertisement. But a 1931 newspaper article quotes U.S. Chamber of Commerce President Julius Barnes as saying, "In a condition of this kind, the thing to be feared most is fear itself." Roosevelt speechwriter Samuel Roseman credited Henry David Thoreau, who once wrote, "Nothing is so much to be feared as fear." Pages from three drafts of the speech inside the case illustrate the evolution of its opening, including the "fear itself" line. From a position facing this display case, turn back to your left and walk about 10 feet on a 30-degree angle to the far end of the glass display case in the center of the gallery. You'll now be automatically redirected back to wherever you left off in the base message.